Grumpy Old Men. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 201.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublich Jr. here with you today, May 4th, 2021. May the 4th be with you. You're going to see a lot of those memes, I'm sure, today from all your Star Wars nerd buddies. This is a special episode. Today, it is not just episode 201, but it is the four-year anniversary show. Oh my goodness, people, we did it. We made it to 4 years. I don't know. Some people might not think 4 years is a lot of years. To me, I think that's a lot of years for a podcast anyway, especially a podcast that I had no idea where it was going or how long I would be doing it. I had no idea what was going to happen with it. But here we are, 4 years later, and we got a great episode today. Chad Daniels is on the show today. Very fantastic comedian that has been on the Late Late Show, been on Conan O'Brien. He's got a special out on Amazon Prime. Lots of great stuff that this gentleman's done. Several comedy albums. In fact, he just recorded a new comedy album at the beginning of April over at Acme Comedy Club in Minneapolis. We talked a little bit about that. Do want to give a special shout out and thanks to Stu McAllister, another previous guest of the show. He helped set this up with Chad Daniels. So thank you, Stu, for helping put this together. We really appreciate it because it's a great conversation. We had a great conversation, and we're going to get to that great conversation. But first, we got to take care of the housekeeping. The first thing that I got to take care of is to say thank you. Thank you for listening, for the people who listen to this podcast every week, or the people who listen to it off and on and sporadically, or just anybody that supported the show. I want to say thank you because, like I said, I feel like 4 years is a long time for a podcast, and this podcast would be nothing without the people that listen to it. More and more people have been telling me how much they enjoy the show and how much that how much insight they're getting from the show and how helpful it is. And that is the whole point of doing this show is to, for one, I love talking about comedy. I love talking about bombing, but it's nice to know that the conversations are helping people with their comedy. So thank you all so much, everybody that's been part of the show and support of the show. Like I said, I wouldn't be able to do it without you because 4 years is a long time. This is episode 201. Which is 200 episodes from episode one. That's crazy. 201, and we made it 200 episodes since then. And yeah, it's a good time. And speaking of episode one, a few weeks ago, we released that. So if you haven't listened to that, you can go back on the feed and listen to episode one with Sam Miller, who is a fantastic comedian out of Olympia, Washington. And I'm re-releasing the season one and two bi-monthly. So every other Friday, I'm going to be releasing those. I think the next one will come out this Friday, and that'll be number five, re-release number five with Mike Castleberry. But go back and listen to those, especially listen to episode one and then listen to this episode, and you can see how different and how much the podcast has evolved over the years. And it's evolved because of good constructive feedback and criticisms and, constantly striving to make the podcast better and better and better. And I feel like we're winning. We're doing it. We're doing what we set out to do. So, again, thank you for everybody that's listened to the podcast. Now, I also want to say thank you to everybody that has reached out and shared the Louis Anderson episode. People have reached out about the Louis Anderson episode and gave me great compliments about it. Thank you guys so much. I do appreciate the positive feedback, though I didn't really have much to do with that other than being able to have the conversation with Louis. Louis was the one with the great insight and the knowledge that he shared. Over 40 years of comedy insight, and he shared it. And I feel like he really had a powerful quote about writing, and you can see that quote, you can hear that quote on our social media, and or if you just go back and listen to that episode, if you haven't already, do that, because it was a great episode. It was one of my favorite episodes, and this episode that you're getting today, super good as well. It's a great episode. Chad had a couple great stories about bombing, which were very entertaining because he's a great storyteller, which you're going to find when you listen to this episode. And speaking of Chad Daniels, you should check out, in addition to his stand-up comedy and all his albums that he's already got out, because he does have quite a few albums out, he also has a podcast called Middle of Somewhere. Check out his podcast, Middle of Somewhere. And he's currently on tour doing live shows now that things are opening up. And you can go to his website, chaddaniels.com, to get all the information on his 2021 tour dates. So go do all of that. Now, if you head over to the artofbombingpod.com website, you can submit a bomb. Yes, that's right. I've opened up a new thing called Submit a Bomb. And what you do is you go to the website, you go to artofbombingpod.com, click on the Submit a Bomb tab, or you can go to artofbombingpod.com/submit-a-bomb, and that'll take you right to the page. And you can submit a bomb. If you have a great bombing story that you want to submit, you can do it there. And the reason I did this is because I have a lot of comedians that will reach out to me about being on the show, being a guest, and I think that's great. Unfortunately, I just don't always have the time to get everybody on, because everybody wants to, there's a lot of people that want to be a guest on the show because they want to share their bombing stories and their experiences, which, like I said, is great. Unfortunately, I just can't get every comedian on. So I've created the Submit a Bomb, and all you got to do, go to the website. There's two ways you can submit. You can call the Bomb Squad hotline and tell the bombing story with your own vocal cords, and that might get played on a future episode of the podcast. The second way is that you can write it out in the text box, and I may read it on an episode of The Art of Bombing, or there's a good chance it's going to get featured as the bomb of the month in the monthly newsletter. That's right, because we have a monthly newsletter, and if you're on the subscription list for the newsletter, just to give you an FYI, that did come out yesterday. It came out Sunday, May 2nd, not yesterday, because today is the 4th. It came out Sunday, May 4th, I sent that out. And if you didn't get it, make sure, if you're on the subscription list and you didn't see it, make sure you check your spam and your junk mail, because that's probably where it landed. But there was some fun stuff in there, including a 10-spot spotlight with Josh Florhog, former guest of the show and nephew of Louis Anderson. And we had a fun little interview that is there. So check that out. And like I said, while you're on the website, subscribe to the newsletter so you don't miss out on the next one. And then you'll be able to see, after you submit your bomb, you'll get the newsletter when your bomb appears as the bomb of the month in the monthly newsletter. It just goes hand in hand and hand in hand. And while you're on the website, you can check out, you can get some merch if you'd like. You can subscribe to the Patreon for exclusive content. You can also just go to patreon.com/artofbombing and artofbombingpod and subscribe to the for exclusive content and all kinds of fun benefits. But the most important way that you can help the show is by sharing the content, which a lot of people shared that last episode. I really appreciate that. I really do. The love was much appreciated. But the best way is to rate the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and leave a nice review so other people will, it'll help us in the searches and people will see it and they'll be like, oh, this looks like a cool podcast. I should check it out. And then we get more listeners and we continue to grow, because that's what we need to do. We need to continue to grow together and get better together. That's the idea, right? Right. That's my vision. All right. Now, on a personal note, I do have some upcoming live dates. May 8th, 2021, I will be at the Comedy Room at Sisyphus Brewing in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Go to my website, danbublitz.com, to get information for that. May 13th, I will be in Tomahawk, Wisconsin. Information on my website. Over the summer, I'm going to be all over. I'm going to be in Montana. I'm going to be in Kansas. I'm going to be in North Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota. I'm doing the Dan on the Run tour. That's right, Dan on the Run, as I prepare for my album recording in August. So if you want to come to any of those shows, depending on where you live, go over to my website, danbublitz.com. You'll see all the information there. And I'm continually adding stuff for the summer, so keep an eye out. I'm hoping by end of May to make all the announcements with all the shows that I got coming up over the summer tour. All right, that's enough of this housekeeping. Let's get into this great conversation that I had with the one and only Chad Daniels. Enjoy, and thanks for listening.
And now, it's time for the Stand-Up Soundbite.
Dads ruin people. Daddy issues are horrible. Every man in here has a daddy issue. And if you're sitting next to a guy and he just leaned in and goes, "I don't," then he has the worst kind. You ever seen a guy pounding a nail into something and he hits his thumb and he's like, "You worthless idiot!" That's his dad talking to him. It's not anger, that's a memory. The things that scare me the most about daddy issues is I'm a dad. I know I've given them. Right? I don't think you know how badly you've affected your children until they murder you. Just wake up with a knife sticking out of your chest and a kid walking away going, "I said Pop-Tarts!" I know I've given them. I have a 15-year-old daughter. And the hardest part about raising a daughter for me is I need her to listen to me, and I need her to respect me, but I also want to show her the respect that I want her to seek out in a partner. Does that make sense? And that's a hard balancing act, because I say crazy things in my house. I'll say things like, "Put your phone down, get your ass over here and pick this up." That is okay for a father to say, but not a boyfriend.
Did you have any shows this last weekend?
I did not. I was supposed to be in Irvine at the Improv, but due to cap restrictions and stuff like that, they decided to call it, and I rescheduled for the end of August. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, that'll be fun. Yeah, Irvine's nice area, too. I used to live in San Diego.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, it's a cool little area, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then I saw you just recorded a comedy album, right? Just at
I did.
This.
Oh, it is just a pile of shit.
Because, oh, no.
Well, I mean, listen, the crowds were fine, and I was just, it was my 12th night doing stand-up in a year, in a calendar year.
Oh.
So I was just so rusty and then didn't really care about the material and stuff. So, but I did want to get it out. You know, off my mind so I could start working on new stuff because, you know, with a year off, I was doing that hour before and then all of a sudden, you know, let's say I head back to Denver and people are like, we've seen this, we've heard this. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to do that either. So I just wanted to record it, get it out of here. And, you know, hopefully people understand exactly what it was. But it was still fun, and I did like the jokes at one time, so I figured I'd give it a crack.
Yeah. Well, again, and on the bright side of all that, too, I mean, you sold out all your shows at Acme, didn't you? Like,
yeah, it's...
That's what I saw online anyway.
Yep, absolutely. It was a little deceiving, you know, because they're at 33% capacity. So this is the time if you want to really... talk shit about selling out stuff. This is the time to go to clubs right now. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point.
Yeah, just like, oh, how many shows you sell out? All of them. How many people were there? 50 total. Just across the week, there were 50 people.
Yeah. I saw, do you know who Taylor Tomlinson is?
I do.
You were? Okay, well, I saw that she was in Pennsylvania not too long ago. I think it was Pennsylvania, but they just kept like adding shows and they did like 19 shows, sold out shows, but it was like limited capacity though.
Yeah,
same thing where it's like 30 people or whatever, but that's a lot of shows for a week.
It's a great idea if you're working on a new hour because then you just get to run it, you know, as long as you can keep from finding a sick person in your show coughing on you, you're good to go.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully with people getting vaccinated and, hopefully that'll definitely help minimize some of that because it's still, it is definitely still scary.
It should. Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, with that. Now, when you're working on, you're talking about just getting your album out there just to so you can start working on new stuff. You know, as much as you tour and everything and all the clubs that you headline, do you feel a lot of pressure on that you have to like every year or so put out new material, like really crank it out?
I don't feel pressure. You know, I was in Sacramento one time and I was just doing a new joke the last time I was there. So by the year later, the joke was done and it was ready to record if I wanted to. And I heard a guy go, "Heard this last year." And it's like, you get a couple of those dicks where it's like, really? Did you record my fucking hour and then just listen to it all year? How did you remember that, Rain Man? Get out with you. But, so it was like one joke and he called me out on it. I don't feel pressure for that because I do know there have been times where people will come to a show and they'll say, "Oh man, I brought my family to hear this particular bit and you didn't do it." It's like, well, I just get sick of them. So after a while, telling the same story for a year, I just start to think like, am I even connected to this? Am I zoning out? Am I glazing over because I don't like it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've seen some comedians, they do the same hour for 20 years. I know one guy who, and I'm not dogging him either, he takes a drink at the exact same time every show because he knows the crowd's going to be clapping at this bit. And so everybody has their own style. It's just for me, I just need change. I mean, I love living in a smaller town, but I couldn't do it if I didn't get to go to cities. This last year when I was home the whole time, I have some good friends here and my kids are here, so that helped, but I was getting cabin fever just because I like a change of scenery and I like new experiences and all that stuff. So that kind of, you know, bleeds into my act as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we're very similar in that way as far as the, because I come from a small town too, and I lived in a small town for a while.
Sure.
And it just, without travel, I don't think I could do it anymore.
and you know, some people love it, and good for them. I mean, if you can do it. I just think my brain needs some shiny shit. I need to follow that around. So
yeah, but it's always nice to be able to come home, you know, when you're out on the road. But definitely in those small towns, it's good to get out, especially here in the Midwest.
Well, it's nice to just be able to go to a restaurant after 8 o'clock because the Lutherans have decided, listen, we don't do shit after 8, so let's close her up.
That was always my biggest complaint I grew up. The town here on South Dakota is where I grew up, and I was living there for a while before I moved up to the cities. And my biggest complaint was it seemed like on Sunday everything was closed. you could hardly do anything.
That's the truth. It's like the stock market was closed on Good Friday, and it was just like, you know that not everybody in the stock market believes in that, right? So I don't understand why we close for certain, you know, religions and not other religions and all this shit. I don't need to get into it. I will say that I should not have brought Lutherans into the restaurants closing at 8. It's just people don't go out at 8. It has nothing to do with Lutherans. I don't know why I picked on them.
It just
has to do with people needing their kids in bed at a certain time, and they don't eat after 8. They have dinner at 5:30. I have a very funny friend, Greg Coleman, who has a bit about if you have dinner at 5:30, you drink milk with steak. Because that's your life. That's what you're into. And I agree. You know, I know a lot of those people. They're fine folks. And like I said, I just need change or I'd go nuts.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Well, now I live in a bigger city, but
nice.
Yeah, it's, you know, still, like I said, it's one of them things when you just got to get out. Because I remember, because where I lived, I think it was more an age thing. More than, you know, I mean, obviously religion definitely takes, you know, has some factors in some of these small towns, but it's just, you know, more older people live in this town. So there isn't, it's not like a young hip crowd with young hip cool things to do or whatever. So Sundays, everything shut down.
right.
Or it's closed very early.
Yeah. And great news. I'm no longer young or hip. So I should be falling right into this pattern. So you know, hopefully someday my brain will click and be like, "Hey, you're old now. Enjoy it."
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I talk about the, you know, young hip places. I'm like, I'm that guy that's it's like 5:30 and I'm ready for dinner and then ready for bed right after.
Oh man, my mom came over and made this big like Easter spread, and I took my dog for a walk afterwards. I was having trouble taking a deep breath. I was so full. And when I got back, like the sun was in my eyes on the way back, and so I was squinting, and I was like out on my feet almost. So I get that too. I mean, I was ready for a nap, absolutely.
Oh yeah, yep. Good times. Good times getting old, that's for sure.
That's great.
Yeah, comedy's coming back, it seems like, which is good, but this is a good time to get into comedy. One of the things I like to talk about, obviously, in Art of Bombing, is I like my guests to share a story of a bad show or a time they felt like they really bombed. So I'll go ahead and let you tell the story.
Okay. I was opening for very funny comedian Derek Richards, who lives in Las Vegas now. He brought me on a bunch of... First worked with him in Appleton, Wisconsin, and he at the Skyline Comedy Cafe, and he brought me to a bunch of Midwest shows with him to open. And I feel like he did not do well very often. So one particular story, we were in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and we were we're staying in the hotel where the show was. It was one of those deals where there was a bar in the hotel, and then it became show night, you know, on Thursday or whatever it was. So we went down there, and it was no opener. Normally, at least, there's like a morning radio person that's like there's a radio station that sponsors the show, and then at least there's a little energy like, hey, everybody, I'm, you know.
Yep.
107.6 and all that stuff. And so people are at least ready, but you just had to walk on stage. So I was no opener. I had to walk on stage and let people know comedy was starting. It was so awkward. And there was a preseason Green Bay Packers game on that they had to shut off.
Oh, no.
So I'm behind the eight ball, and I'm also not good at this. I don't have this skill set, right? You know, people always say, oh, the MC, the first person that goes up, they just tell you where the bathrooms are, and then they, you know, they're the least funny person on the show. Horse shit, man. MCing is a skill set that is unique unto itself when it comes to comedy, right? I think a lot of people can be funny, but getting a cold crowd to dial it in, warmed up, and know that the jokes you're telling, because a lot of MCs will also be the middle person during different shows. So when they go up and they're doing their opening joke, the crowd is already focused. They're already dialed in. They've already been told where the bathrooms are. So, you know, their jokes are working. But now they go up in the MC spot, the first spot, and they have to, you know, try to get people dialed in with jokes they know work. They've heard them work, but people aren't really into them because they're still finishing up their conversations and stuff. And it's a tough spot in Canada, and how they used to do it here. The headliner, the last person, the person that people went and paid to see, would go up first, do some time, then they'd bring up their friends to kind of gain the respect of the audience, and then they would do a longer set at the end, which I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I love not having to do extra work. I'm pretty lazy, but but it is a nice system to have that flow to a show. That's still how they do it in some parts of Canada. But so I go up in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. I go up trying to get their attention, and nothing is happening. And I'm not saying I've had people not laugh at me before and not respond to material, but there was like despise on some of their faces. I mean, they just, I don't even know if I use that term right. It doesn't matter. They hated me. I mean, it was like, you know, fuck you for even coming here. I can't believe we left our house for this. That kind of stuff. And so I just didn't know what to do. I mean, there were big burly lumberjacks at the bar that started chirping at me. And I was a young guy, right? So I talked about I hate getting old. But there's an amount of respect that I think you automatically get when you have gray in your hair, when you walk on stage, because people go, well, he's been through some shit. He knows what's going on. He's earned that. Something caused that hair to turn gray that gave him a little, you know, clarity on something. But I was really young, and so I go up, and I'm guilty of this too. When I see a young person go on stage and they start to talk about something important, I just think, well, what do you know about that shit? You just moved out of your parents' house. So I'm guilty of it sometimes too.
Yep.
So I go on stage, and nothing I do is working. I mean, I am trying, and at this time in my career, I just was a real bitch on stage, where if it wasn't going my way, I could turn it. And I figured out, you know, growing up, that when I was embarrassed, it turned to anger pretty quickly, right? I didn't let myself sit in embarrassment that long. I was like, well, fuck this, turn it around and get pissed off at the crowd. So it was a perfect storm of horrible. So at the end of this, I'm telling you, not a laugh. It almost felt like this was their thing in Fond du Lac. They got together, and the rule was we don't laugh at the first guy, just to mess with him, just to break his spirit. Because I'd never been in a crowd where no one had laughed ever. But I was 20 minutes in, not a laugh. So I start to go, you know, I'm trying to think in my head, it's like, I hate these people. I'm clearly never going to see them again. So it doesn't matter at this point what I do. So I thought, and I didn't want to get booked back there either. I just didn't care. The only thing I was thinking of is, you know, this guy that brings me on the road, Derek, has to go up after this. And he brought me, so the booker is probably going to talk to him no matter what happens. So I end up saying, hey guys, I know we did not make a connection tonight, but you might be thinking, why is this guy even here? Well, Time Magazine named my closer one of the top 10 closers in comedy. And so that's why I'm here. It's actually, I know you had to sit through that 20 minutes, but now we're at the point where I actually get hired. I go, are you guys ready for this? And, you know, it was kind of like, at least the disdain left their face. I think that's what I was trying to say earlier. The disdain left their face. And they started to soften just a bit. And I said, all right, here's the thing. I need 2 shots of Jack Daniels and 2 Rolling Rocks. And then whoever chooses to bring those to me will be part of this. So you have to have a good sense of humor. And so, you know, I'm like, is it, someone's got to do it, or we just sit here. And so finally, one of these big lumberjacks at the bar brings me 2 bottles of Rolling Rock and 2 low, you know, not a shot glass, a low ball glass with shots in it. And he brought all of that to me with one hand. And I was like, God, Jesus, here we go. So I go, are you sure that you're going to be okay with how this goes? Because now you're part of this. And he goes, let's do it. Right now, he turns around and does this. Everybody cheers for him. So now I'm extra pissed off. I'm like, really? You guys all took the same bus here? Is that right? And so I get everybody. I'm like, all right, who is ready to see this closer? Couple people. So I go, you guys, Time Magazine named this one of the top 10 closers in comedy, period, in comedy. And I'm here in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Finally, you know, half the crowd does this or whatever. And I go, who is ready? I feel like it's the most I'm going to get. They're cheering. They're kind of wooing. I do the 2 shots, hold up my 2 bottles of Rolling Rock, and I say, fuck you. You're the worst fucking crowd I've ever been part of. And I scurried out of the comedy club and went back to my room immediately. And so that was the worst show I've ever had. I've never been stared at for 20 minutes. It was unreal. It felt like I was speaking a different language.
Like, did they know there was a comedy show? Like, I feel like that's one of them situations where they were just at this venue to watch that football game, and then it got shut off, and that's why they were pissed.
I think some people were surprised by it, because there were pool games that got shut down, and then, like I said, the game was shut off. But there were chairs set up facing the stage.
So some people definitely came for the comedy.
Absolutely.
Show. Like, they
knew. And it was just brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Yeah. I guess you wouldn't know because you said he left the room. But I was just going to say, how did he do?
Yeah, because he told me the next day he murdered. He absolutely murdered because he went up and he said he spent the first 15 minutes making fun of me. So I'm sure they love that shit. They absolutely loved it.
It's like, I'm going to get them back by throwing you under the bus.
Oh, absolutely. And that's totally fine with me. I mean, you know how well the person in front of you does, where if you jab at them a little bit and the crowd goes, no, we're not laughing at that joke.
Yep.
You know they did well and that at least they liked it or her.
Yep.
And so, but man, if you tell a joke and the people are into it and you can do 15 minutes of material on it, then you know that no one had fun.
Yep. That's a good point too. Cause I've seen that at shows where the host or the next comic will try to razz on the comic that just got done. And when they do well or they're well liked, the crowd will not have, and then it creates like this weird awkwardness for the show too, because now they're just like, well, why they don't like that person, because they're like, well, now you're just being mean.
Absolutely. I did two shows one time, and I shouldn't tell two stories, but I was doing a show way up north in Minnesota, like on the Iron Range up where the north or the American Hockey Hall of Fame is. And so it was, again, you know, in this little room that could have been anything. Like the day of the show, it could have been like a knitting conference in the show. And then they turn it around and put a mic up there and a couple speakers. But I worked with a guy who juggled for his closer. He's a cowboy. And he had a cowboy hat and a twisty mustache. And he did a whip cracking at the end. And he made fun of me, too, the first show, and everybody loved it because, I ate shit. And then the second show, I finally did well, and then he tried the same jokes, and they weren't into it. And then I stayed for that show. I left for his first show because I didn't want to have to deal with the people. But then I went, stayed for the second show, had a couple beers, and he was juggling. And the deal was anytime he dropped something, you had to drink. And so finally, he kept dropping stuff, and he'd go, why aren't you guys drinking? And I was just like, because we're fucking wasted. You suck at juggling. So now I'm helping him to make up for the first show, unprofessional, but, you know, pretty proud of myself as a young comedian, still getting laughs from the back of the room. I was pretty stoked about it. He was not thrilled, and I was relieved of the rest of the tour. He called the booker and he was like, I don't need to work with this asshole. But
yeah, we've had enough of that. But that's still funny, though. That's a funny thing to do. But you're right. It's very unprofessional. That's like one of my biggest pet peeves at a comedy show. Like when another comic starts heckling, because it's like, you of all people know that it's terrible, you know, that it's a pain in the butt to deal with hecklers.
Right.
But it's usually these comics that are very unaware of, you know, how funny they are. You know, they think that they're the best comedian ever when they're out there heckling. And then when they go on stage, they just, there's no, to them, they kill every time, you know, it's usually one of them people.
Yeah. I
see a lot.
I was working at the Comedy Caravan in Louisville, Kentucky. And I was supposed to head, this was like one of my first headlining gigs for the whole week. And I was pretty excited about it. And then the guy called me and he goes, you know, we have an opportunity. Gallagher is on tour right now, but they're called the Gallagher Monologues because he's just working on jokes for his next special. And we're going to have him here for the week. And so why don't you come in and open one of the nights? And we'll pay you what we would have paid you for the whole week headlining. And I was like, yep. And so I show up and my buddy's there from high school. He lived down there, or maybe he was just working down there. I can't remember. But anytime I get my high school buddies, I get a little more of an attitude when I'm in the show because I want to do well.
Yeah.
So I'm opening for Gallagher. Gallagher starts heckling me. It was unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
I was doing a joke about horses, which is supposed to do poorly in the beginning, so then I can sneak attack at the end of the joke. And it's doing poorly just as it's written. And he goes, you know, you shouldn't be doing horse jokes in Kentucky. And then he just goes off, right? So then he comes on stage and whispers something in my ear, just unintelligible. And into the mic, I go, good luck without your melons, you dick. And I handed him the mic. And then I heard two loud crashes, and both servers got their trays knocked off their hands because people were violently moving when I said that. And I don't know positively or negatively. I just know two trays of drinks got dropped. Because I can't handle it. I can't handle being big-timed by somebody who just another person in general. I just can't.
Yeah.
I don't like the big-time aspect of it.
Since some people are worse than others, I actually produced a show with Gallagher years ago when I was in San Diego, and I had to take him around to media, and it was an interesting experience, but also, like, he almost ruined comedy for me. Like, because I was still, you know, within probably my first 5-6 years of comedy, so, I mean, I'm still, even at 10 years, I'm still a young comic, you know, sure. Like, when it comes to comedy. Sure. So, but I was super just young then in comedy, and we were having breakfast between these two media stops, and he asked me what my comedy was about, you know, what I talked about, and you know, I was like, well, most of my stuff is, you know, I talk about my life experiences and kind of my observations, blah, blah, blah. And he looked me right in the eye, almost ruined me, and just totally crushed my soul. And he goes, oh, nobody gives a shit about you. They just want to hear dick and fart jokes and sex. And I was just like, that is the hackiest advice I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And it was like coming from this person who had been in the industry for so long, where it was like, do you not have any artistic integrity? Like, everything I thought I liked about this person just was gone immediately.
Well, I was pretty drunk in Las Vegas one time. I was hanging out. Went out there with my buddies. I'm in one fantasy football league, and only because of the Las Vegas trip. I don't care about the fantasy football. I lose every single year. But we were out there, and I saw Gallagher doing one of those shows where there's not even a showroom. They've just arranged the slot machines where he can be in the middle of them, and he's doing a show like that. And my first inclination was to go over and be like, oh, horses aren't funny, mother, you know, this shit, because I was, like I said, pretty drunk. And then thank goodness I had a little bit of sense to go, why would you ever kick another comedian, regardless of what they did? Why would you kick another comedian when they're down? Because this looks miserable over here.
Yeah.
I got some advice from Tracy Morgan at the St. Louis Funny Bone once, where he goes, you can't be cookie cutter. You can't be doing the same opener, like all this stuff. And I was like, that's really great advice. And then he went up, and every single show opened with a 10-minute chunk on anal. And at first I was like, well, you're doing the exact opposite of the things you told me to do. But I have to tell, I love him. I think he's so funny. It didn't matter. And I laughed every single time. So he was saying the same words. Didn't matter. I still laugh. So when he says the same words, it almost doesn't even seem cookie cutter, because he's him. And I just think anything he says is funny. But
I think that goes too with certain comics. They're, I don't know, it's like they can deliver in a way that it seems like they're delivering it the first time. Sure. You know, like, even though they know the joke inside and out, they're just that likable and on stage, and just their delivery, you can't tell. So, like you said, watching him every show, you're still loving it.
Yeah.
I feel like he's probably, I've never met him, but I feel like he's one of them people. He seems like one of them people. You know,
I think he is
movies
too.
And stuff, like, super likable.
Oh, he is so likable, and he was such a nice guy. I mean, I don't, you know, you never know what experiences people have. You catch somebody on a bad day, but I worked with him for a whole week, and I will tell you, he was an absolute delight.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah, he seems like it. Now, when you have, like, I know you've been doing comedy for a while now, but, like, when you were younger and you would have shows like that, what do you look for, you know, in your, like, to figure out what happened, you know, as far as, like, if you listen back to sets or watch videos or things like that, how do you try to figure out what happened and how to prevent it from happening again?
For me, it was always my temper. You know, I'd listen to my set and I'd just, you know, be like, oh, you yelled at the crowd 8 times in 4 minutes. Well, that's not going to work. You know, I still do it sometimes, but now I do it in a way where they see me and they're like, oh, look at this man hanging on to his youth, trying to pretend to be grumpy. I mean, there's a different feel to it now.
Yeah.
And I know where it's coming from, so I can, kind of control it a little more and whatever else. But when I was younger, I think one of the biggest problems I had when I started was trying to placate the audience, trying to guess what they wanted to hear, trying to tell them the jokes that maybe they'd like, instead of just doing your bits, owning the show. And then if they want to come along, they can. And if they don't, they don't have to. But, so I think one of the biggest things for me to figure out was not caring about the outcome. And that's difficult, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Nobody gets on stage in front of strangers to try to get them to laugh because they don't want positive attention.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that was a difficult maneuver. But once I did it, it stopped being about what the audience wanted and saying, like, you know, this is what I'm going to talk about, hop on board. And so that was one of the best. That was probably one of the, I remember when it happened, it was in Rockford, Illinois, one show. And I was guessing. Nothing I said was hitting like I wanted it to hit. And finally I was like, fuck this. I'm just going to do what I want. And they, if they like it, they like it. And it ended up being a fairly decent ending to the show. And I thought, well, this is what I'm going to do from now on. Because, you know, there's one thing, if you're going to do what you want to do and it doesn't go your way, at least you stuck to your guns.
Mm-hmm.
But if you try to guess what the audience wants to do and it still doesn't work, that's doubling down on not sleeping. So I just decided I'm going to do what I want from now on. And then it ended up being better, right? You eat shit on your terms, it's a lot better than eating shit on somebody else's terms.
Oh, absolutely. That's a good point with that. And then I feel like, too, did you feel like that when you made that decision that helped build your confidence, too? Like, not just, like, on stage, but I mean just confidence in your writing, in your jokes, that kind of thing. Because, you know, you said you were kind of trying to guess what they wanted you to, you know, joke about, and you were just like, I'm going to do my stuff. And, you know, you said it got better.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it gives you confidence to know that you're not going to be jumping around. It gives you confidence to know that you can string some thoughts together, because if one doesn't work, you're going to stick with them. And so that leads you to bigger chunks. Instead of, you know, oh, that line didn't work, they're not going to like this whole story. I was like, well, I guess we're going to sit here for 7 minutes, because that's how long this story is. You know, there's a... In my opinion, one of the best joke writers, maybe the best to ever come out of Minneapolis, his name's Dave Mordahl. And he did this thing with me once. We were working together in Fargo, North Dakota, and he goes, you're so worried about laugh. Let's both go up there and see how long we can keep the crowd's attention without getting a laugh. Just tell a story, but keep their attention. And I was like, all right. So I made it to about 4 minutes before I could feel people kind of turning, like, what the hell is this? And then I went into straight panic mode and started, you know, machine gun jokes.
Yep.
And he went up there and just went into his act like a prick. He didn't even do the thing like we were supposed to. He just made me do it. But afterwards, he kind of Mr. Miyagi'd me, where he was like, did you notice that when you were talking, people were still looking forward and paying attention? He goes, that's all you need. They don't have to be laughing the whole time. They just need to be into whatever you're saying So then you can get to a point that you want to make or a punchline or whatever it is. Because I was always thinking, like, if they don't laugh for 15 seconds, this show is off the tracks. And so I was always like, bing, bing, bing. And that's exhausting, too. Mm-hmm. So that was some of the best advice I've ever gotten was from him about if they're focused, you're winning. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, no, that's a good point. I heard somebody was talking about it on my podcast, and it was a quote from somebody else. But you know, it's either be funny or be very interesting. You know,
sure,
because you're gonna keep, you know, as long as you're interesting, you're still gonna keep their attention. You know, they might like the comedy show, but
right. But I remember. Again, St. Louis Funny Bone. I worked there so much, but Michael Winslow was there, and these two young comics were in the back talking about, oh, Michael, this guy isn't funny. It's like, are you out of your fucking mind? This guy, we're talking about a world-class entertainer here. What this guy can do with his vocal cords is on a whole other level. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
People don't come here to, I mean, they weren't laughing a ton because it was just so impressive. I think people were so taken aback by what this guy was doing. I mean, to play the national anthem as Jimi Hendrix, just like on guitar, but it's just his voice into a microphone. Mm-hmm. It was unreal. I was blown away by that guy. And again, super nice guy. Once you got to know him, I mean, a little standoffish at first, of course, why wouldn't you be? But
yeah.
But man, sweetheart of a guy too.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's he's another one that you would hope, because that's one thing too with comedy. Because definitely going back to the Gallagher situation with me, it's like you meet some of these people that you looked up to, and then they turn out to be like completely not what you expect, and then it just kind of like ruins the whole facade of what comedy is. You're like, oh,
I did get a vibe as a very young kid watching Gallagher, like. I would not want to hang out with this guy. He seems like he thinks he's way too smart. But again, who knows what people have going on in their lives. I have no clue. I haven't met too many stinkers. I mean, most of the people that you hope are nice and kind are. So,
Well, yeah. Well, that's good. That's good to know. Yep. It's one of them things, like I said, with comedy. And like you said, you just don't know. In that one time you meet somebody and they are maybe a jerk, they could have just been having a bad day. You really don't know. That might
absolutely
not be how they are all the time. That could have just been that one time.
Yeah. I mean, just because you wanted someone to be nice to you doesn't mean that was in the schedule for them that day. So,
yeah, that's good observation. Now, kind of going back to the bombing, in I call this the bumming of bombing, which is that feeling when you bomb. How did that affect you when you were younger? Like how has it like changed? Like, did it last a long time if you bombed, or?
Well, when I started comedy, I had right away a baby, and so there wasn't too much time to feel sorry for yourself. Maybe on the drive home, but once you know. Once you got home and you were changing shitty diapers, you were like, oh, I was doing comedy. People weren't laughing, but I wasn't having to, you know,
wipe shit off
of someone's hair because they had a blowout of their onesie. So, so that helped a ton, you know, just having a family and just kind of, you know, roots to go home to and a stable home life. So that helped. You know, I bombed in Arlington, Virginia, I'm going to say 2 weeks ago. It was the Thursday I was there. It was raining. It was such a weird... I got to the show late because when I checked the Uber time, it was 4 minutes. And so I was like, oh, I still have to grab some stuff, so I'll go down to the lobby and then push accept. And then it still said 4 minutes. And when I pushed it, the person who picked up my fare was 19 minutes away. So my problem, I just didn't, you know, I'm just getting back on the road. I forgot all about, I mean, my credit card that I was using for Uber was expired when I got back on the road. So a lot of stuff had changed.
Yeah.
So I get to the show late. You know, it's just a weird energy. I walk through the room. No one's talking. It was just a little crazy. And then the opener went up. I thought it was funny. I was laughing in the green room. but didn't hear, you know, a lot of response from the crowd. And I get out there, and to their credit, 2 weeks prior to that, I recorded that album at Acme. And so I was just trying some new thoughts, right?
Okay,
but normally, yeah. I feel like recently when people are coming out to see you, you can get away with trying new thoughts because they know eventually you'll get to the jokes. But this was a different energy. It wasn't fun. And I got heckled by this old guy. I was doing this bit that had never, ever offended anyone or been heckled. And this guy lost his mind about it. And so I was just like, to hell with this. And I went back, and that one bugged me because I thought, well, is a year off too long? Then I started questioning, like, maybe I forgot how to do this, because I didn't do any stand-up during the lockdown. I was home for a year, and I just went straight dad mode and real life mode, and I didn't do any writing, and I just unplugged because I wanted to not worry about it, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I didn't know when it was going to end. So it's like, I'm not going to be writing this material, and then 3 years from now, I can go do it. So I just thought, I'm just going to do my podcast, and I'm going to just relax and hang out. And that I did. And it turns out not my best call. Because I got back, and, you know, you have to add doing new stuff to Rusty. Plus, there's a weird energy. You know, I'm not at my best. This crowd has forgotten how to be a crowd in the last year. And some comedians will tell you, don't ever blame the crowd, but fuck you. You weren't there. You don't know. I'll call Umar and he'll tell you it sucked. I'm telling you. But that one bugged me a little bit, 'cause I was kind of mm-hmm. wondering what was going on. So then I went into all my new jokes. I didn't open my computer. I turned my phone off, and I just spent the day going through the lines kind of in my head. What could I do to fix these? What could I do to make them funnier? And then I went back, and by Saturday, the Friday crowds, I still wasn't up to snuff, but they were. I mean, they both gave me standing ovations as like a, hey, we know what you're going through. We get it. Kind of a support yeah. deal, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. And then Saturday was really fun. The jokes were, you know, my brain was a little sharper, I feel like, and the jokes were flowing a little better. So that was good.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect with stand-up comedy. If you don't, like, it's a muscle that you have to constantly work. Otherwise, like, you, it's easy to, like, lose that, lose your edge or whatever. You know, you get rusty. Sure. You don't yep. do it for a long time. It's just it's something that's always interested me about that. Because even, like, take a couple weeks off and sometimes it you get a little rusty going back to it.
Yeah, but, yeah, you know, we have all to stay sharp. That's for sure. Yeah. I mean, when this guy heckled me in Arlington, I didn't even go after him. I was like, I'm willing to listen to what you have to say. I mean, so clearly I had been real-lifing it way too long, because I'm like, oh, this person has something they'd like to get off their chest. I guess I'll let them finish. And he just never shut up. He's just, you're such a pussy. This is bullshit. I'm like, okay.
Oh, whoops. Whoops. Do you have, I mean, because you're not fairly, you're a well-known comic. Like, a lot of people, that when they're asked who their favorite comic is, your name comes up a lot, at least with people I know. And with
you
that,
gotta get new friends, man.
I probably do. You're probably right. But with that, because there's so many people that, I mean, like I said, you're pretty well known. Do you get, like, some leeway when you're trying new material because there's people that know you and they're fans of you coming out? Do you run into that, or...
I think so. So, you know, in the last couple years, I mean, barring the year that was off,
yeah.
people, I could tell people were coming out, because the first time ever I was in Spokane, Washington, I walked on stage and somebody yelled out a bit of mine. And I was like, well, what is going on here? This is fancy. I've heard this happen to other comedians before. And so I started to see kind of an uptick of more people coming out, more people waiting in line to, you know, buy merch or say hello or get a picture or something. So once I started to see that, I did notice, like, I'd listen to sets of mine that I record on my phone, and I'd go, well, they are laughing way too hard at that. That is not done yet. So then I'll have to go somewhere else, like just a random open mic, and try the bits so I know where they're broken, because I think people were giving me the benefit of the doubt. And that's not going to be good when a new person listens to an album. They're going to have the same thought I'm having. Like, why are these, is this a laugh track? Why are these people laughing this hard? Mm-hmm. So you do kind of have to monitor that. It's very nice, but you do have to monitor that, I think, a little bit. Otherwise, you become complacent and just, I mean, listen, I told you, yep, I'm lazy. If people are going to laugh, I'm not fixing shit. So
just going to let it be. Let it, yep, be the way it is. Now, yep, have you always lived in Minnesota?
I have, yeah. I spent a month in California just at a vacation property with my kids and my wife at the time. Just because I had an agency, and they kept saying, like, you need to move out here. You need to move out here. And then I went out there, and they got me one audition in a month. And I was like, I guess I don't need to live out here, because, I mean, this is ridiculous. So mm-hmm. I spent that time out there. But otherwise, yeah, Minnesota the whole time.
Yeah, because that's pretty impressive too. But that's also one thing that's great about where, you know, with technology, even though with social media and everything, and
true,
how toxic it can be, that, yeah, definitely still helps. I mean, because, you know, that's what you hear in comedy. You're like, oh, you either got to move to New York or you got to move to LA.
Sure.
And then there's, you know, a comic like you who is very successful, and you've been able to do it from where you want to live, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, young people ask me all the time, like, how did you do this? Was it this? Was it this? And, you know, the truth is, I had a wife that supported me, I mean, exponentially, stayed home with two young children while working a full-time job so that I could chase my dream. I mean, if you can find yourself one of those, good for you. But I think they are unicorns, and I really lucked out. I mean, she was so supportive, and I'm not even close. You know, nobody's yelling out my bits when I walk on stage if not for her.
Oh, there's the secret. The secret, yeah, has been shared.
Yeah.
They say behind every good man, there's a better woman, so.
Oh, there.
There's something to that effect.
Well, there's a break in the graph when we're talking about her, so.
That's great. That's great. I got just a couple more questions that I like to ask. One of the questions I like asking on this is, when you tell a joke that and it bombs, or you're starting to feel like you're losing the audience, what starts going through your mind?
Oh, interesting. Tell a joke and it starts to bomb. Well, here's the deal. I break down the fourth wall a ton. So mm-hmm. when I'm on stage and a joke isn't going well, what's going on in my mind, I am saying into the microphone because I want everybody to experience how uncomfortable I am, and they're just going to have to understand what's happening. So I'll just let them know, like, oh, you know what? I thought that line was going to work because of this. Instead of going home and fixing it and having these thoughts to myself, I just introduce the audience into it. And, you know, sometimes someone will yell out, like, well, I didn't get it. I didn't, like... I was doing a joke about how white ladies were mad at white men. And I was saying, but you're the only ones. How I wrote the joke was, you're the only ones that can make us. So if you're mad at us, stop making us. And I started after like 2 months off, I started saying, you're the only ones that can have us. And it was silence. And so I was like, well, what in the hell is going on here? Why didn't, and somebody goes, what do you mean have us? And I was like, oh, yes, that's the wrong word. I'm supposed to say you're the only ones that can make us. And they were like, oh, yes, that makes way more sense. So sometimes doing that, you know, you open it up to why they didn't laugh, and they can tell you in real time, which is nice.
Yeah, that's a good way to workshop the jokes and get them to where they need to be. That's,
oh, yeah,
sure.
It's comedy diagnostics. Absolutely. It's like, do you want to send this report to Apple? No, I want to fucking figure it out right this
right.
instant.
I ain't got time for them to get back,
yes,
to me.
Yes, exactly.
Let's take care of it right now. Get on to the next thing.
Yep.
Oh, that's great. Well, I like to go more positive towards the end of things, so I have a couple things. I've got a playlist on Spotlist called The Get Pumped. Is there a song that gets you pumped up? Maybe not necessarily to perform, but just, you know, helps get your energy up for doing whatever.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's probably... I mean, I guess when I start a run, which I have not run in a long time, let me be very clear about that, but, you know, it depends. There's like LL Cool J's Mama Said Knock You Out. There's Metallica's Enter Sandman. It's just, you know, it's got to get some Band of Horses. Is There a Ghost? Starts out very slowly, but that's my driving song. I pop that on, and then I'm just dialed in, because right in the middle when the drums hit in that song, it's like, well, I'll be going 120 if you need me.
I like it.
I got pulled over one time and was explaining to the police officer about the song, and I go, do you mind if I play it? And I played it, and I go, this is when I started speeding, and he let me off with a warning. It was fantastic.
That's great.
Right when the drums hit, he goes, yeah, I mean, I could see how that would do that. He goes, maybe don't play that song in the car anymore. And I was like, you got it.
That's great. Good stuff. Do you have, I know you've done quite a bit in comedy, so do you have, what's been one of your favorite gigs that you've done so far? I know it's probably that's a tough question, but.
It's probably a late night spot, only because I get to introduce people in my life to, like, high-end celebrities, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the first time I ever did Conan, I had some friends from high school there, and when Conan came back in the green room to say hello, their jaws dropped, which is pretty neat to watch. And then I did James Corden, and I brought my daughter there. She's a huge fan of carpool karaoke and mm-hmm. just him in general. And so she got to be there, and they let her sit. We were all on the couch for the intro, all the guests, and she got to sit behind us, and she got to wave and stuff. And
oh, that's cool.
And James, so Corden is actually in the green room with us, and my daughter's telling him a story about figure skating, and the producer comes back and goes, James, we need you out front. And he goes, just a second, please. I'm listening to her story about figure skating. And that, we still talk about that. So,
wow, that's amazing.
I think it's probably stuff, you know, outside of comedy. It's more like the reactions of people in my real life that I get a kick out of.
Oh, that's great. That's beautiful. That's a good story too. Like that's, cause that's one of them, you know, she's going to remember that forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Him doing that. That's amazing. That's amazing.
But I would say now that I remember, probably the best moment of my career was at the end of my last special called Dad Chaniels. I brought my kids out on stage, and when I brought them out, the crowd cheered louder than when they cheered when they announced my name at the beginning. And I thought it was so awesome, just for, you know, people that were there to see the recording of the special, to get to see the two human beings that I talk about the most. And I think they really got a kick out of it, just being there for the whole taping and for that whole experience. So that was head and shoulders, you know, above. That's mm-hmm. greatest moment for me. Yeah,
that's awesome. Beautiful. All right. The last thing I like to do is we play a game called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20, and I'm going to ask you a random corresponding question.
Okay. Do I tell you the number?
You tell me the number. I can't read you the question if I don't know what the number is.
That makes sense. 18.
I got to try to, like, read your mind. All right, 18. What food do you dislike the most and why?
Oh, wow.
That'd be a tough one for me. Yeah, I like all food.
talking to a guy who's been hiding his tits the whole recording with his arms. I don't hate a lot of food. Food that I hate, that I dislike the most. I'm going to go with lutefisk.
That is a good, solid
Yeah, for those of people that don't know what lutefisk is, it is a very Scandinavian dish, and it is a codfish, a white fish, that is soaked in lye. And you may recognize the word lye because it's been in some murder documentaries about how they dispose of bodies. So
yeah.
It's a disgusting taste.
And, I would agree.
That's what I'm going to go with. Lutefisk, yes.
Lutefisk. That's a good one. That's probably one of them things that I definitely it's on my list, low list of foods to eat.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
It's like one of them foods where it's, even if I was starving and that was all I could eat, I'd probably go with starving. Well, this has been great. I really do appreciate you taking the time to do this podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Dan.
Where do you want people to work, direct people to?
I think Instagram is where you're going to find your best luck as far as like seeing dates or anything like that, or just kind of keeping up with the times. But my website, chaddaniels.com, has a whole tour page, and you can go listen and watch a bunch of stuff on there. So
cool. And then you said you have a podcast as well.
I do. It's called Middle of Somewhere. It's with my friend Cy Amundsen, and it's basically, it started because we'd call each other and just laugh about our week. And then those calls lasted for an hour, like we're just two old people. And so we decided to record it and let people listen in on it.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Well, thanks again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See, are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.